welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast, where we watch a series of movies all in one day, and then afterwards discuss them to basically no end at all. My name is John, and joining me is a slew of individuals on this lovely evening. We have Richard.
Greetings.
And we have Matthew.
Howdy.
And we have Pat.
Hi-ho, everyone.
And we have Josh.
Salutations.
And Stu.
Waka waka.
Oh, we got a full house.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Waka waka. Waka.
So, before we get started, we should discuss the matter of a certain wager between Matthew and myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pleased to report that we settled the bet at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. So as a reminder, this is a bet we had about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and Tuco's grave discovery. And we made a little video about it.
My God, what happened?
I must know.
Where can I go to find the answer, John?
Yes, please tell us where.
I'm posting it on our Facebook group's page. So if you go to facebook.com/cinemarathon, you will find the answer there, and you can see how that went. And also, I'll probably post it on our Twitter feed, which is Cinemarathon Pod. That's Cinemarathon P-O-D. In addition to all that, if you want to email us with any sort of comments or questions, or if you have a suggestion for a future marathon, you can email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. And finally, we have a website at cinemarathonpodcast.com, which you can check out.
Feel free to use that email for any future ridiculous bets that you think we should right. Try and settle on.
Yes, I am available to settle any and all wagers within the Los Angeles area that are movie related.
What did you call this? Like Cinemythbusters?
Is what hashtagged
it.
Cinemythbusters, yes. Yeah. But anyway, enough about all that crap, because that's not really what you wanted to hear. You came to hear us talk about movies, and on this particular marathon, we decided to do The Muppets. All seven Muppet movies. So it was a pretty good marathon, I have to say.
Yeah, I'd have to say for me it was maybe top three easiest marathons I've ever done.
Yeah, like, it was pretty easy breezy.
Yeah.
As compared to some of the, you know, I mean, it's no Police Academy, but.
Oh, man. It's the same number of movies, too, right? Seven.
Yeah,
movies?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine sitting through that much horrible Police Academy.
Yeah, you were fortunate to miss out on that.
I don't know. It was quite an experience. It was pretty fun.
I mean,
it was horrible.
It's kind of like what you feel like coming back from battle or something. It's like we survived it, and we're stronger now for it.
That's
but.
True.
Yeah, but this wasn't battle. This was a walk in the park with the Muppets. It was pretty easy. So,
well, I think it was a nice throwback to, I mean, when we were all kids. You know, these are the type of movies that we watch as kids. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the movies that have made up a lot of the previous marathons, you know, maybe one or two you might have seen when you were younger, but for the most part, a lot of those are more recent movies, or at least when you were more like a teenager or something like that. This is kind of the first throwback to truly kids movies.
Yeah. Oh, we should mention this marathon, just so you know which Muppet movies we did. We did not do any television specials or shows or anything, because it would have taken so long. So it only consists of seven movies, which involves The Muppet Movie, The Great Muppet Caper, followed by Muppets Take Manhattan. After that, we have A Muppet Christmas Carol, Muppet Treasure Island, Muppets from Space, and finally the newest film, The Muppets. So seven movies, quite a breeze, quite lovely. Yeah, so let's start with the first movie, The Muppet Movie.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side?
Which is such a sweet, charming, nice movie. Usually we're just talking crap about all the dumb stuff, but the movie's like, so cute and nice.
Yeah. I have no, I mean, I grew up with it, but it honestly, it never was like one of my favorite movies growing up, but it was always something if you threw on, I would just get locked in. You know what I mean? It's like, it comes on TBS or something. Oh, next hour and 20 minutes of my life is, you know, gone from me. But yeah, it holds up. It's one of those, it's a classic, and it sort of helped start, I guess, a generation of of movies that followed, right? I mean, yeah. The style movies. So. I mean,
come on, Rainbow Connection, man.
Yeah.
It starts off on a great note. I mean, what other way would you want to start the Muppet universe on film, at least, than with the Rainbow Connection in a real swamp, which really impressive, because right. you're doing this very kind of cinematic flyover, and then you're slowly coming down, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, Kermit. Right in the middle, on a log, on a reel, clearly not a backlot or a set or anything like that.
Yeah, this is no Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
hey, don't badmouth that. I have very fond memories of that Christmas special.
But I could say even before Rainbow Connection, I really like how the movie starts with all the Muppets going into like a screening room.
Yes.
About to screen their own movie. Like, it's such a good way to set off immediately this idea that it's just a movie and it's kind of all for fun. The Muppets kind of do that a lot. Winks and nods to like, oh, we're in a movie and this isn't actually real.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of the whole premise or setup of the Muppets from the start, isn't it? They're always doing a show. And so it's supposed to be in a kid or family friendly way, a peek behind the curtain of what it takes to create a television or variety show. And then it became, obviously, when you get to movies, Jim Henson was probably sitting down going, well, we can't lose that. We can't just suddenly put them on film. We got to probably call attention to the fact that they're making a movie. And so I think it's a perfectly natural way to start.
Yeah, it's all about entertainers and entertainment, and they do it well. Like, you always come out having been entertained, which for a concept, it's, I feel like, especially with puppets, you know, that would be hard to pull off, but Jim Henson does it in spades.
Very well.
You know, we should just get right down to it. Favorite Muppet. Let's
around,
just cut to the fucking
the
chase. Yeah.
Why don't you start us off, John?
Well, I mean, come on. Fozzie the Bear. You got to go Fozzie the Bear. He's hilarious. And and it's my kind of humor, which is like no one even finds it that funny.
Yeah.
And he's just torturing people. Fozzie the Bear. That's my vote.
From a design standpoint, I think Ralph is my favorite character. He just, I don't know, just something about him just feels very like, you just want to hug him or something. And he's like, he's funny too. He's like pretty, like he's funny, but he also plays music. I don't know. There's just something about Ralph that like really, really stuck with me.
I think he was actually the first actual Muppet. That Henson, I think I was reading like Henson took him on like the Pete Rose show and stuff. Even though Kermit's obviously like the front man, I think it's like Ralph was the first like official Muppet.
Mm.
I'm going to have to go with Gonzo. Gonzo the Great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Only because he, no matter what seems to happen to him, like he loves it. Like he loves being blown up. He loves being hurt. You just like, you can't destroy him. And anything you do to him, he just loves. Maybe I'm like, you know, kind of masochistic or something like that.
Well, the dude fucks chickens, so you know, ain't nothing wrong with that.
Are you a chicken fucker, Richard?
He loves birds. That's all it is. There is no sexual relationship
right.
Why? He just loves them. They're good friends.
They're clearly fucking. Clearly.
I go with Fozzie Bear as well.
Yeah, that's right. Two in the lead. Fozzie Bear. This is the ultimate. You know, we're going to find out.
This determines it.
I can say that I personally identify with Fozzie often and have for quite a long time now, and I've even been told independently without even bringing him up that other people have told me that I remind them of Fozzie Bear. And
so you pick yourself then?
Right, exactly. I pick me as the best Muppet.
And I'm clearly Ralph because I'm black, so I think it all makes sense.
And you play a mean piano.
Yeah.
No, you're what's his name from Muppets from Space.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Dreads McGee.
Well, we'll get to him later.
Animal!
I like animal. Animal's the best.
So you also picked yourself.
am I animal? Because that would be awesome. I don't think I am. But I enjoy animal and his silliness.
I actually also am a big fan of Ralph the Dog. We'll get to why that gets really disappointing as the series goes on. I think we're all kind of picking from the core group. And that makes sense because they're the ones that you see the most often. But, I mean, there are so many great supporting characters. As many people are, a huge fan of Beaker.
Oh, yeah.
Beaker's awesome. Amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
I'm
surprised no one said Miss Piggy, though, because she's like a huge... Or Kermit.
Yeah.
Well, they're pretty big.
I think the reason that most people won't pick Kermit is because he feels too obvious in a way. I love Kermit, but right. There's just something about... I'm much more of a supporting character guy, for the most part. I tend to key on people who are less the broadest character to appeal to the most people and focus in on attributes and, you know, little quirks in that. I mean, and you're the same way, John. That's why, you know, you're picking Fozzie Bear, because you're keen in on one particular...
I'm picking him because he's the best Muppet, hands down. That's why I'm picking him.
I mean, I think a lot of, like, the reasons why we chose the Muppets that we did had to do with the comedy factor. Mm-hmm. Clearly, you identify with him because you said his type of comedy is, like, you, like, relate to.
Right.
And Josh likes Animal and his antics, and it makes him laugh, and I don't know, Ralph, I like, because I think he's funny, as well as I think he's just sort of like endearing. Like, I just like his design. But yeah. Kermit's a hard character to be your favorite, because he's usually a workhorse character. He's not
an everyman.
Yeah, he's not the guy that's bringing the laughs usually. He's the guy that's he's the straight man to, like, the Miss Piggy or to the Ralph, or to, you know, so I could see why Kermit wouldn't show up all the time.
And I'm also, purely from, again, a supporting character standpoint, and this may be obvious, at least to you guys, but Statler and Waldorf are...
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, they're amazing.
Guaranteed laugh.
Amazing.
Right.
Well, I think it's really telling in the first movie, in the Muppet movie, like, I mean, yes, there's tons of Muppets and they're all in it, but you really have to, if you have to pick the two that are, like, the main Muppets, it's obviously Kermit and Fozzie, especially in that movie. Mm-hmm. They feel like the stars of the movie to me.
I mean, and for good reason. I think it was a good setup to, like, to introduce them to, like, the film market, because, like I said, like, you have a straight guy who you can identify with and, like, feel like you're, whose path you're following, and then you have, like, Fozzie who brings the antics.
Right.
So it's an odd couple situation. Yeah.
So one of my favorite scenes in the movie, it's just an amazing joke. They're early on, they're at this bar, and I forgot how or why, but somebody says, like, hey, drinks on the house. And then, instantly the entire bar, like, fills out and just goes to the roof. And then on the roof, they're like, what, there ain't no drinks up here? Like, what's going on?
And then you come back to Fozzie saying works every time.
Yeah. It's, like, so corny. Like,
so
drinks on the house. Like,
now I know why you picked Fozzie Bear.
Yeah.
Fozzie gets thrown over the bar.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
actually one of my favorite moments in any Muppet movie, is when the big Muppets get thrown somewhere.
Yeah, toss them around.
It looks really fun.
Yeah,
they do it again in what is it? Great Muppet Caper. They chuck them out the bus or
a
whatever.
A few times, yeah. And they get thrown out of the plane too.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they just go ragdoll.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it's so funny.
Yeah.
Also, if I may, to go back to the El Sleazo bar, that's where we get in a row about four really funny cameos, and
It was like cameo city in this movie,
not the least of which for me is Carol Kane as the miss who keeps showing up when Kermit says myth.
Yeah
It always makes me laugh whenever she shows up, especially the second time where it seems like she's following them just to fucking say yes, and that always makes me laugh.
By the way, we should talk for a minute about Kermit on the bike.
Yes. Yeah. Please and thank you.
It was impressive, and then, like, it blew my mind later on, like, as things just escalated in effects. So yes, I agree with you.
Like, honestly, it's like special effects wise, you can, you know, you like John Carpenter's the thing. Like, that's good special effects. And then you ramp it up, it's like District 9. Like, holy shit, that's special effects. Kermit riding the bike is, like, top three things for me. And I know it's, like, not as epic as, like, a Michael Bay movie, but just, like, the simplicity of it is really amazing.
It's so much more meaningful and thoughtful, too.
Yeah, just the simplicity of the execution, or, I don't know, maybe it's a difficult thing to do, but it looks simple. It looks like Kermit's riding a fucking bike. Like, it's awesome.
Well, it's a cool thing to go back and watch as an adult, because when I was a kid, I never thought about it, never thought, oh my god, this is so amazing. I was just like, yeah, Kermit, ride a bike.
Exactly.
Like, that's what it is.
Why shouldn't he?
Yeah, but now knowing, you know, the work that goes into that puppetry, you're just like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
Well, there was a moment, was it in this movie or in the next one, where Miss Piggy is he and Miss Piggy are both riding bikes in the park, and, like, they're interchanging, like, the close-ups. So, like, the person that's close-up is the one who's talking. And
yeah,
that's Great Muppet Caper, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Great Muppet Caper.
I don't know. I guess since we're talking about it, like, it's impressive there. When there was one point where we were watching, and the person in the back is always the person that just kind of nods or doesn't talk or anything. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, like, just as somebody said, that would be really impressive if the person in the back talked, Kermit goes, like, blah, 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 and says something while you can see the entire bike, and there's clearly nobody there, apparently.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind.
Do we know how they did that?
I
mean,
don't,
remote
actually.
Control, something, like,
yeah, maybe he was,
fucking
like, fucking
magic
in him,
like,
or something. Yeah, I'm not sure.
No, Kermit's real. He's real.
That's why Fair Doc enough. Hopper wants his legs.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, my God. Doc Hopper. What an amazing villain. just like this Colonel Sanders maniac. I don't even know why he wants Kermit to be his like
spokesperson. Yeah, first
spokesfrog. But he's so obsessed as if there's no other frog on the planet Earth.
There is no other frog like Kermit.
Right.
That's fair. But yeah, I love just the way these movies sort of take these villains and just paint them with the broadest of strokes,
yeah.
with nary a that deep a character to really fill in. I remember there's a bit where they're driving and Doc Hopper like jumps out from behind a billboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's been waiting for, I assume, days or something.
Well, they just finished painting it too, because Max is carrying a paintbrush. Like they just finished. Yeah.
He's been waiting for them. Ready to go.
Yeah.
Is that the billboard with the giant pie?
No,
that's a different one.
No, with the real pie on
it. Yeah, that was my favorite. They released the pie. It's actual whipped cream pie all over the car.
Because that's really practical.
It's amazing. I mean, it's so funny. These movies play so fast and loose, not only with villains, but with gags like that. But it all works. I mean, there's a magic to it, because there are so many movies that if they tried that type of humor or that style, I know I would not be receptive to it. I'd be like, this is stupid. It doesn't work. It's not funny. It's too forced. But there's something magical about it, because it's really funny when you watch the Muppets.
Yeah. I got to say, that's a feat to behold for the Muppets to pull off, for Mr. Stu Chait to sit here and give it a thumbs up. It's like, that's a rare. Has that ever happened on this podcast? I'm trying to think.
What, that comedy I've liked that I've liked a movie?
Yeah, well, you've never liked
it. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Die Hard.
I'm kidding.
Every marathon that we've done, I've come in. And
that's true. That's a good point.
That I've been a part of, there's at least one movie that I like.
Comedy wise, though, that's pretty.
Well, pretty solid. I don't know that we've done a comedy marathon that I've been a part of.
Yeah, maybe not.
No, we haven't, because Police Academy does not count as a comedy marathon.
Well, I was in. I started with Die Hard, so after that, I think it's been like action, western, and that horror. Type of thing, horror. I don't think we've done
fair
a comedy.
Enough.
So, but you are right to mention that, though, because I am very difficult to please in general, but especially with comedy. Most, I would say 95% of movies that are labeled comedies that come out, I won't even watch them most of the time because they look so bad.
So Jack and Jill is off the table?
Anything with Adam Sandler, unless he works with Paul Thomas Anderson, is off the table.
There you go.
But I mean, I think it shows that the Muppets almost have this aura about them that they're like almost immune to like cynicism or criticism, because like if you don't like the Muppets, you're the devil. Like it's just
really hard to find a flaw in something that's obviously just doesn't take itself seriously and
yeah.
very candid. It's just like any criticism that you'd have to offer up, it would immediately be refuted with just lighten up. It's not that important. And
that's totally true. Because, Stu, I think most movies that upset you, they sort of take this high ground of they think they're so great. But you're right. It's like the Muppets is very just – it's so lighthearted. It doesn't take itself seriously at all.
Well, I totally agree with that in a general sense. But it's also – I don't know. It's difficult for me to put my finger on. But I think it's a little more than that with the Muppets, because there are movies that don't really try that hard that I still would find like not funny, not entertaining, not something that I would want to watch on a regular basis. These guys are just something special.
Well, it just has the benefit of being really good.
Yeah.
That always helps.
Well, I think what's something interesting about the Muppets is it's kind of a new generation of Warner Brothers, you know, had the Looney Tunes, and Disney has like Mickey Mouse. And the Muppets were like the first kind of group of characters that were really different and kind of spoke to a new generation of people. All the people who were involved with the Looney Tunes by the time the movie started coming out had long since moved on or died. And with the Muppets, you know, Jim Henson was still alive for the majority of the films. I guess not the majority, but the first several films. Jim Henson,
a decent sized chunk. Yeah.
And the genesis of the film legacy. Yeah.
And most of the people who did the puppeteering and the voices are still involved with them. So that also kind of holds true to what they are. You know, like, you know, people can take the Looney Tunes and put them in whatever situations they want. Just find people to do their voices, like just like that. Sitcom version of the Looney Tunes that's on Cartoon Network right now, because, you know, they have the characters, why not use them? But with the Muppets, it's always been, you know, when they use them, it's like because they're trying to do something specific. Like they, you know, they have these characters and they want to put them in a good situation, and the people who were involved with it are the people who've always been involved with it. And I think that helps keep some of the magic alive.
I think it's interesting that the Muppets seem to be a franchise that is really multi-generational, because usually generational gaps cause like comedy to take a leap or a step forward. And I feel like this is sort of rooted in a classic style that sort of works no matter what, like when you watch it.
I think I also read online that the way Jim Henson described the Muppets, obviously, you know, they started with Sesame Street, which is for children. And I think Jim Henson saw the Muppets as, he quoted, as entertainment for everybody, which is sort of like, it pleases the kids, it pleases the adults. It's just all around. Everybody smiles and likes it. And I think the modern day equivalent that I can even think of is something like Pixar, where they sort of ride this amazing line between youth oriented programming and like still being not just only pandering to kids and gift throwing adults some bones, but like actually being like legitimately great as like both adult and child entertainment.
I think it's important to note that both Muppets and Pixar are the least cynical money making franchises I know of. Like, you don't walk into a Pixar movie and have a cynical moment, I don't think, in any of those films. Like, I don't walk out of Incredibles, Finding Nemo, Toy Story. They deal with heavy...
Cars 2 is kind of rough. I have to confess.
But the content isn't cynical. You might be cynical about what happened, right, but okay, the content is never cynical.
Fair enough.
It's funny, and I think it's interesting that that's sort of the cross-generational divide, that gets closed when you take away cynicism. I mean, what else do kids and parents like all at the same time that's that cynical? Like, almost nothing, right?
Right. So we should get back to just the Muppet movie in general. I think, I mean, did we have anything else we wanted to say about
Steve
it
Martin
specifically? Oh, yeah. You know, we should talk a lot about all the various cameos and stuff in the movie. There is, like, stacked. Steve Martin, obviously, in my opinion, the best one. He is so fucking funny.
You
as that waiter.
Now. May I?
Just killing it. It was kind of almost sad to watch in a way, because Steve Martin hasn't been that funny in a long time.
That was the year he made The Jerk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. Exactly. Exactly. It makes sense. And then what we got? Oh, shit, man. It's like Mel Brooks, mm-hmm, and who else? There's so many.
Bob Hope. Yeah. Elliot Gould.
I think the first Muppet movie has to be the most cameos in a movie I've ever seen. Like, certainly, well, of all of the Muppet movies.
It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Oh, that's a good
pretty much
point.
All cameos.
That's true. Actually, that movie's really similar in the way. It's almost like the Muppets are holding the torch for that movie.
Right.
And this idea of, like, take every, you know, modern comedy actor and put them in a movie.
And it's the same type of movie, too, when you think about it. It's, I mean, this crazy, like, road movie and the driving. How many car stunts do they do in this movie?
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
You were
with
talking
Muppets
about,
driving.
Yeah, you were talking about the bike being impressive, which it is, admittedly. But I think I might be a little bit more impressed with the amount of stuff they pull off with the Muppets driving. And it's not like, oh, here's a close-up of the Muppet of Fozzie driving the car, and then we'll cut to this really wide shot where you can't really see. No, it's a medium kind of tracking shot, and you can see Fozzie behind the wheel and Kermit in the passenger seat. You're like, how are they doing this?
And they lean out the window and talk. And
yeah, it's
a couple of those cars came pretty close to like hitting people and stuff.
Yeah, So the bike is really impressive, but the truck that they're driving is even more impressive.
The songs in the movie in general are like really strong.
Yeah,
like I remember after all the whole marathon, the next day I had that like Moving Right Along song like in my head, and that was like one of the first ones, and it just stuck with me even after all the songs all day.
Yeah, man, I was just humming all of those Muppet Treasure Island songs, just in falsetto.
Kevin Fever.
Oh God,
it's always very touching to me for when Kermit confronts Doc Hopper at the end, and actually levels with him and tries to connect emotionally, and he asks, what good is all this money gonna bring you when you obviously have no one to share it with? And Doc is convinced that his lackey that he's been dragging around with him is a true friend of his, and so Max shows up and he says, no, Doc, I'm not your friend, and he deflates.
Yeah.
And then anger swells in, and he threatens all the Muppets' lives. It's so thick with emotion for
it's
me.
Also a good joke, too, when Kermit's like, well, if you don't feel like you have any friends, I guess you're just going to have to kill me.
Right, yeah.
And then he's like, all right, kill the frog. it sort of undercuts its own, like, sentiment. It's so moving, and you're almost about to cry, and then it makes this really funny joke.
Yes.
And then the animal comes out, and he's like King
Giant
Kong
animal.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm rendering every point moot.
Yeah. Am I correct in that, like, they made a life-size giant animal head? Because that thing looks
huge. Yeah. when you just see the way it moves, or when they like the wind and breezes kind of catch it, you can tell it's like really thick pieces of material. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure for that longer shot, it was probably a smaller model, but I think some of that aerial shots and the close-ups of it, it was just like a giant Muppet head.
It's tough to beat that a football field-sized animal. That's a pretty good accomplishment.
You got like Falcor, like that's the only other like huge Muppet that I've ever seen.
I wanted to bring up two things from the movie. One is the meta film reference when they show up and meet Dr. Teeth for the first time, and they're trying to recount the story, but instead of recounting the story, which would take too long, they give him the screenplay.
That is so funny.
And then later on when they catch up with him, and they're like, how'd you find us? And he's like, well, I just read the screenplay. Like, we knew you'd be here.
Oh, man. And Dr. Teeth, like, reading, exterior, and you
see... With a helicopter shot.
Yeah, you see little bits of the movie, and so... Oh my god, it's so funny.
And the other thing I wanted to make was it's only in the first three movies, but the obligatory Sesame Street cameo, which is Big Bird walking down the road, which is not only fun to see, but also really hilarious, because the Fozzie and Kermit are on their way to try and break into Hollywood, and they stop and they're like, hey, want a lift? He goes, no, I'm on my way to New York to try and break into public television.
That's awesome.
Good luck.
And I should also say that the end of the movie, I mean, there's a lot of nice, sweet moments in the Muppet movies, but to me, like, the rainbow landing in the Muppet Studios as it hits them all, and then it, like, tracks out as they're all singing. And they found the end of the rainbow. It's the rainbow connection. And it's like,
gay
shit.
What? Well, also, just like, you know, when the rainbow first hits them, it's just that small group that they had met. Mm. And then as it starts off then on Kermit and starts pulling out, you can see it's all the Muppets.
Yeah, it's like everybody
that have ever been made for the for the Muppet Show. Like, they're all in a huge crowd.
It's an incredible visual. The just kind of the epic scope of all of the Muppets right there in front of you. I mean, it's, you realize, I think in that moment, not only how sweet it is, but also how much it takes to put the Muppets together and how many of them there are. And it's, I mean, it's a huge accomplishment to see all of them together like that. That's not an easy shot to pull off.
Yeah, I think the first movie definitely is, like, in my mind, holds the greatest technical achievement of the Muppets. Like, absolutely. Even in the new movies, like, as the time goes on, I became aware that I was less and less impressed by the situations that the Muppets were put in. And, like, with the exception of the new Muppet movie, like, the Muppets or whatever, it, like, they tried to give you that sense, like, that they were, like, doing new technical things and, like, making the Muppets do things you wouldn't normally see. But for the most part, by the time you get to Treasure Island and From Space and stuff, you don't get the shots anymore. You don't get Kermit riding a bicycle. You know, it's all medium shots, and you know somebody's just under camera. And sort of the magic gets lost a little bit through the franchise. But yeah, for at least the first few movies, they really kill it.
Definitely. All right. Well, let's move right along, shall we? To the next movie, which is The Great Muppet Caper.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody!
And me.
Boy, I wish I were you people seeing this for the first time!
Which, to me, it's another really super solid, awesome movie.
It's my favorite movie,
it's
actually.
It's really funny.
Best villain of all the movies.
Oh my god. Charles Grodin.
He's so good. Kills amazing.
It. He, 10 out of 10, man.
Like, yeah. This is zero criticism. It's like Daniel Plainview and Charles Grodin. In this movie.
Yes.
Like, top two performances of all time.
I'm going to bury you on the ground, Kermit.
But yeah, just Grodin, like, having the hots for Miss Piggy, and just with all sincerity.
He's so,
like,
devoted.
Yeah, like, just give me, like, literally treating it as if it's a real movie and he's really in love with this real woman. And then the musical number where he's singing.
He's singing. Yeah. That is one of the funniest things I've ever
he's
seen.
He's like Irish in.
Exactly. Miss Piggy. And then he and Kermit are both on Irish in as if they're arguing over Piggy.
Oh man!
Oh my god!
Amazing.
Well, and his character is surrounded by supermodels.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
right.
Miss Piggy is elevated to the level of these supermodels that of all the women that he could get at any time, Miss Piggy is the one that he wants.
She's like the apex.
Yeah, because there's that amazing scene where he's like basically confessing his love to her. He's just like expressing his obsession, mm-hmm. and Miss Piggy's just trying to escape, and they're like backstage, and there's all this hubbub going on, and Miss Piggy's like trying to get her clothes like together and everything, and that's a really incredible shot. It's like goes to that technical achievement. It's like you have people running around and models like going in and out, and Miss Piggy's at, you know, foreground, and she tries to run away, and Charles Grodin follows her. It's just, it's hard to imagine the level of like technical acuity it would take to make that shot happen. Yeah. Like, it's just people running. It's really incredible, but it sort of adds to the comedy because it feels really real. It's like Miss Piggy's trying to get away and Charles Grodin is trapping her because he's in love. Like, it's so amazing.
Borderline sexual assault.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost. Yeah. We should also talk about what I might deem one of the best running jokes in a film basically ever, which is the idea that, so they have this opening where they basically wink and nod and say, hey, we're going to put on a show. And I think they literally talk over the credits, like Mystery Science Theater style. And they're like, it's a movie. And then they reveal that there are these like Fozzie and Kermit are reporters, and their headline is like twins join newspaper.
Yeah.
And there's this running joke that they're twins.
Twin brothers.
And like, and it just keeps coming up. And then there's that amazing photograph of their father, yeah. I guess, that's like this weird hybrid Muppet of like the two of them.
Yeah, basically, it looks like Fozzie, but it's green and has the
it's like Kermit eyes.
McFrill. The McFrill.
Yeah.
The neck
yeah.
frill, yeah.
The neck frill. Yeah, and I was like, yeah, neck frill? I was like, what is it, McDonald's?
And things like later in the movie, there's a girl, like, I think it's like Kermit in a park, and a girl's like, hey, it's a bear. And it's like yeah. no, honey, that's a like, so stupid yeah. and so funny.
It's just great that it's like one of the dumbest jokes ever, but they stick to it, like, through the whole movie. Like,
so many times.
Like, because that could have easily just been a one-off, you know, at the beginning of the movie. Oh, they're twin brothers. But then you call back to it at least, like, every 15 minutes. And it's just, like, I love that they spend that much screen time on it.
Like, Fozzie and Kermit brushing their teeth in the mirror, and Fozzie's yes. like, which one's me? Like, first, even if they were twins, like, wouldn't he know what side he was on? Like,
which one walked in last?
So good. Oh, my God.
I really like the opening number, the opening musical number for this, because it completely caught me off guard. I had only last seen the movie when I was too young to really pay attention to movies for a long period of time. So yeah. I didn't remember anything from the movie apart from the finale. So the beginning, John, like you said, where they're telling the audience, hey, it's a movie. We're playing characters in a movie. It's going to be fun and silly. Join us. It's so funny and it's so well put together on this.
It's like kind of brilliant.
Yeah. It's so silly.
Hey, it's a movie.
Yeah. That's hey, it's a movie. That's it. Yeah. And, starring everybody and me. And
Charles Jones like, and me.
And me. Sneaky.
You know, like he's sneakily joining the cast of the film? What is happening?
We'll see him soon enough. And I was really startled when Sweetums, the big brown shaggy Muppet, he's still chasing it after them in the beginning of this one, and he drops right down a manhole. Yeah, yeah. As soon as he shows up, he says something and then drops right down a manhole in the street. I was so startled because there was somebody in it, of course, but he just fell down a hole. It was so incredible.
I also love that so they're in London the whole time, and then they go to the Happiness Hotel, which is full of like hillbillies from like northern Georgia
and
for
American,
some reason.
Yeah, American Muppets.
I don't know. Like, I love the leaps of logic of like, why wouldn't they all be British? They're all like American.
And of course, they stay there for free because when they go to check in, the options for payment are credit card, cash, or sneak out in the middle of the night.
It was like, oh, popular choice. We should talk about, if we were mentioning cameos earlier, John Cleese appears in this movie.
Yes.
And I, honestly, it might be my favorite Muppet cameo because it goes on for a goddamn eternity.
It's almost not even a cameo anymore.
I know.
It's almost like just a full-on role.
Yeah. Which I love. I love how committed they are to that joke, because the joke is basically like he's a boring like British aristocrat. And so it's so like drawn out and paused and oh dear. And they talk about they've never left the house in like 20 years.
The wife hasn't left the house in 12 years. Yeah.
And the funny part of it too is that the whole setup to this is Miss Piggy is pretending to be this rich, you know, head of, you know, what is it, a magazine or
Lady Holiday?
Yeah, she's
the
what is she?
Clothing designer.
All right, so she's pretending to be this so that she can go on a date with Kermit. So she's made up this address. Although the way she gets the address is to basically make Kermit say it. So, oh yeah, that's the address I live at. So she just goes there and is trying to sneak into the house, like
climbing up the wall,
and they keep
and stuff.
The wife is saying to John Cleese, like, what is that? And he's just like, it's a pig climbing up outside of the house. Pay no attention. She breaks in and she's like sneaking along the floor, and it's just they're just sitting there eating dinner.
Like, the doorbell keeps ringing and none of them are gonna answer it, so she goes, I'll get it.
I think that's what helps with these movies too, in terms of the humor, is that they really will take the absurdity all the way to the end. I mean, it's
and are totally unapologetic for it.
And,
right?
But I mean, that's why it works. I think there are movies that kind of hedge that when it comes to comedy. Sometimes they'll make maybe kind of an absurd one-liner or a situation, but I mean, it's not the same type of movie. But the reason why a movie like Airplane succeeds as much as it does is because it embraces how ridiculous and over the top it is. Yeah. I think a lot of comedies will have a moment like that or a brief exchange like that, but then they'll try and be normal. And I think that's why the Muppets succeed so well, is they go all the way every time.
Yeah, and the other cool thing, just watching it in a marathon, I really noticed that of all the marathons we've ever done, this one was not that we weren't talking through some of the movies and stuff, but this probably held the most attention of the most people for the most amount of time.
I don't really feel like we fell apart until Treasure Island. Like,
yeah.
Right? That's where we started to kind of get chatty.
Definitely. But it was really just like everyone's just kind of quiet, watching the movie, laughing. Like, it's pretty impressive. Even if several movies in, things like... like Kermit shaving, and
then
he explains like he doesn't even grow facial hair, and one day he should try it with like a blade in it. Like, he's just doing it. Like,
they do that at the end, which is why it's such perfect comedic timing. Is because you watch him shave, and you're like, okay, this is already absurd. Because why is Kermit shaving? But then at the end, it's just like, yeah, one day I should try it with a blade in it. It's just like, it just circles around and makes the joke perfect from beginning to end.
I can't imagine another comedy franchise holding our attention the way this one did. Like, are there any other franchises we're even considering that we even put on the same level as this?
Pink Panther's
maybe.
Funny, maybe. Mm. And just to have this many movies.
Yeah.
Like, usually, especially with comedy, usually, like, the first one's great, and then the second one is like, okay, they're rehashing old jokes or doing the same thing again. I think what's so awesome about Great Muppet Caper, and I think you're right, Matthew, I think it's my favorite one too, is they really kind of build on the foundation of the first Muppet movie and go completely out of there. They go to like London, and it's a totally different story, and it's so fresh and awesome. Watch something like Austin Powers, like, funny movie, interesting premise, very fun. And then all of those sequels are like, hey, remember that joke where, like, you didn't see my dick? Like, let's do that again, but, like, a different one. Like, they take literally the same gags and can kind of rehash them. And I think what's awesome about the Muppets is, it's not like Doc Hopper's cousin Jimmy Hopper and, like, the same fucking movie.
Dennis Hopper show.
Yeah, Dennis. I would see that movie.
Let's not go too far into it now, but we should keep what you're saying in mind, John, for the most recent movie.
Yeah, but I actually think that's okay.
Well,
like, that's not at all a negative.
No, it's not negative, but
because it is very much
just keep that in mind when we get to the last movie, because that is a kind of what they're using a little bit to try and to rope into the familiar and the nostalgic in order to, you know, make you laugh again. And I think that works in a lot of ways. It's a different approach than what you're suggesting with Austin Powers, because Austin Powers just beats the same joke into the ground over and over and again, and this is not the same thing, but it is still depending on recognizing and remembering old jokes that have already been told.
Well, did anyone else have anything about Great Muppet Caper?
I love the method that the Muppets use to actually, once they're actually on top of the building that they have to break into to stop Charles Grodin and the models from stealing the, was it a diamond?
Yeah. The baseball diamond.
The baseball
diamond. Yeah, we didn't really mention that, but the whole movie's a diamond heist movie.
Yeah. The the method that they used to get back down onto the ground once they've broken the window, mm-hmm. it's so ingenious and so clever, and it works so well for them specifically that they all link arms and they form a net mm-hmm. because they're all so light. They just lower themselves down.
Yeah.
And once they're down, then they can start hilarity.
Fucking shit up!
Yeah. But it's such an incredible visual gag that works so well for them as characters, for whatever creatures they are, and because of how they're made, that they're using their own physics.
Right. Well, it's like it almost exists in this weird reality where they are, in fact, not the animals that they right. seem to be. They're like Muppet. Literally just yeah. Muppet. Like they're puppets.
Yeah, exactly.
Another thing we need to bring up is the bodysuit Miss Piggy.
Yeah, right in the motorcycle.
Oh my god, yeah. Jumping through windows and...
Which makes an awesomer appearance in the next movie, but yeah, it's always weird and off-putting to see, to me at least.
Yeah, they kind of use these really long wide shots of some poor stunt person who has to, I'm just like, put a Miss Piggy head on and drive around.
Some awesome stunt person.
Yeah, but it kind of works for me. Like, I never, it always got a laugh out of me.
Yeah.
It's just, like, obviously it doesn't look in proportion to Miss Piggy's proportions.
Right.
But
just about a foot taller than she really would
yeah.
be.
Well, I like that, to my mind, when Miss Piggy's incredibly angry and raging out, she somehow hulks out and becomes like a big stunt woman driving around. You know, that's sort of a privilege that only Miss Piggy really gets, right? Like these sort of action sequences where she's like kicking ass or driving around.
Because in the musical sequence, like the water sequence, the Miss Piggy suit comes out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Miss Piggy's an interesting Muppet because she really stands out from the rest. I guess she's like the girl of one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
But she's really funny.
Yeah.
She's always one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like we haven't talked about her a lot about in the past two movies, but she really is like a central focus of comedy in both of those, and rightfully so. Yeah, she brings most of the funny situations to the table. So,
and she's, you know, there aren't many female Muppet characters that we see.
There's really three that I can think of.
Like that's Janice. True.
Yeah, and Janice Piggy and one of the rats that we meet in Manhattan.
And Camilla.
Oh, Camilla, that's four then. Exactly.
Also, you know, long before Larry David was getting into awkward situations, I feel like that's Miss Piggy really sells those scenes well where she's getting caught in some lie or... She's sort of made up this fantasy about her. None of the other Muppets seem to get in trouble like that. It's always just, like, you know, getting caught. It's...
Like when she gets her, like, phone calls from her agent, like, or whatever. And she's, like, being all, like, cutesy, like, with Kermit. Like, oh, hey, Kermit, or whatever. And then, like, 2 seconds later, she's, like, talking hardball, like, on the phone.
What do you got? Yeah, book it.
And the Sesame Street cameo. Everyone remember what it is for this movie?
It's Oscar the Grouch. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Sesame Street cameos are something that were awesome in the original movies, and I believe it's like they couldn't do it later because of like a rights thing when they sold it to Disney or something.
Well, the Muppets get sold after Jim Henson passes away, and that does not include Sesame Street. Yeah. So Sesame Street is separate, and
right?
So
because he was wise enough to recognize that needs to like belong to PBS.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it was him because he passed away and then they sold the company. So I'm sure he that was his intention and his family carried out those wishes. But I mean, that's what's so nice about the first three movies. You get Big Bird in the first one, you get Oscar the Grouch in this one, and then of course the next one's the best one.
Well, we should move on to the third Muppet movie, which was Muppets Take Manhattan.
Together again, now we're here and there's no need remembering when. 'Cause no feeling feels like that feeling. Together again.
This was my favorite growing up, and I don't know, it's between this and the first one for me. Not that I don't enjoy this the hell out of the second one.
Something changed while you watched the marathon, maybe.
Well, it was more that I hadn't seen any of these in a very, very long time, and I'd actually never seen Muppets from Space at all. But I hadn't seen any of these movies in a long time. So, but this was the one that I watched the most growing up, was Muppets Take Manhattan, and so I had kind of this fondness for it. And it's not that this one diminished it in any way for me. It was just, I guess I was more surprised at how much I loved the first one than I remembered. So
yeah, I'll agree. I definitely went into the marathon because I saw the first one when I was much younger, and I was like, oh, that one's okay, but they get so much better. And I don't know if it's because I'm older now, but the first one is way funnier than I remembered it being.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I, Stu, like you, I think it was like Muppets Take Manhattan and Great Muppet Caper were the ones I watched like a million times. And this was maybe, I don't know, my second or third time seeing the first movie. And now that movie is awesome.
I think there's something in it, and this is, again, nothing against the Great Muppet Caper in any way, but I like the ones that focus in on the Muppets being the Muppets, like who they are. And it was a great premise and idea to have them play characters for the Great Muppet Caper, but I don't know. There's something about the Muppets in the pursuit of show business and fame and wanting to make it. And I don't know. Maybe it's because of what we all do out here in LA, but that speaks to me, and it works the best, I think, to see them striving to get success in show business.
Definitely.
And I like that pursuit.
Well, I'm definitely with Stu and John. I like that the first movie and this movie, the third movie, are two of my top favorites. So, but what I like about this one is how it sets up the fact that once again they are playing the Muppets, like we said, but also that they've had their time. Like this is almost playing up that they are getting kind of tired, and their best gig that they can get is doing, like, you know, school graduations, and that's why they're trying to figure out what to do with their lives now. That now that the Muppet Show is done, and presumably, like, that their time making the other Muppet movies is done. Yeah. And that's when they make the decision to, we should do a Broadway show.
Yeah. Well, that was such a great reveal too, is because you see them and they're having this great musical at the top of the show, and there's this big number and they're all dressed up, and you're like, oh, look at the Muppets, they're having a great show and it's successful. And then they reveal that it's really a college graduation, and it's just so funny because you're like, oh.
Was it a college graduation though? Because I was under the impression that they were actually workshopping the musical for a college audience.
Well, it's definitely at a college campus theater.
Certainly.
I don't know if it was a graduation. Right. Not,
yeah, they said that they were in the senior class.
Right.
Maybe it wasn't the graduation, but it was for a senior project or something like that.
Senior citizen project. There's some like 80 or 90 year old people in that audience.
Yeah.
Those were the professors.
Senior doesn't mean you're at 4 years. It just means that you've been there for 4 years. You're a senior, then you're a super senior, then you're a super duper senior. And
get
so
education.
Double secret probation.
But I think you guys are right. Like, the spirit of this movie, I think this movie and the Muppets, like the final Muppet movie, are the ones that remind me the most of these old, like, MGM musical. I guess Great Muppet Caper 2 is a lot like this. But these sort of old musicals of, I don't know if you guys ever seen, like, you know, Babes on Broadway or anything like that. Like the old, like, Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney, like literally the plots of those movies were like, they're in a small town and, oh no, they're about to close the library or, you know, whatever. And they need to raise some money. And they're like, there's only one way we can raise money. Let's put on a show. And like the one I'm thinking of, Babes on Broadway, they actually, you know, take the show to Broadway. And Muppets Take Manhattan feels so much like that movie to me, where they're like wanting to put on a show. They're trying to get it on Broadway. And it's very much in the spirit of those old movies, which I really like.
I also like this movie so much because of the fact that it has a little bit of an element of sadness to it. I mean, the beginning of the movie gets pretty sad for a while because they show up in Manhattan thinking they're just going to make it. And, well, first of all, there's a great cameo, probably my favorite cameo of the whole series, which is Dabney Coleman.
It's like as a fraudulent Broadway producer. Like nutcase.
Yeah, and he's like trying to get money out of the Muppets, and he gets caught red-handed. This woman like bursts in and just like, you stole my life savings! And then he like grabs...
It's like Gonzo.
He grabs Gonzo.
No, it's Camilla.
It is Camilla. You're right. Yeah. It's Camilla. And then Gonzo goes after him.
But he grabs Gonzo by the nose too, right?
Well, I think it's because Gonzo says,
don't take her, take me. And then he grabs Gonzo by the nose. I'll take him too. Yeah.
And so he's trying to get away and then like running down the hallway.
And like Animal latches onto
him. Yeah, and then Animal jumps on top of him. And I mean, it's basically Dabney Coleman running around with three Muppets on his like his nose, his shoulder, his leg. It's hilarious.
But you're right. They are not afraid to make it kind of sad because they sort of break up the gang. And then periodically through the movie, there's these sort of sad scenes where Kermit's like reading postcards from the gang, and they're always in these like shitty situations. And they actually do make for kind of funny like throwaway gags.
Certainly, yeah.
Like, what is it, Ralph? In the kennel,
operating
with the guy that was it Schnookums?
Yeah,
brings in his dog.
Is a male.
Write it down.
It's because so like that funny joke, like it's funny that I just love that they dedicate themselves to the stupidest shit, because that like the movie comes to a stop. Oh, the Schnookums joke. Like, it's a good 3 or 4 minutes of just, like, this dude talking to this frou-frou dog. And you're like, why is this happening right now? It's, yeah, it's just great. It's just so funny.
It's so sad, too, when Ralph starts crying and all the other dogs start crying with him. And then it's just
they're like
a
howling.
Whole room. Yeah, a whole room full of howling, sad dogs.
I think I also noticed that two of the dogs, they all have their names on them. And one says, like, Jim, and the other says Frank, which is, I'm assuming, very obviously a reference to Jim Henson and Frank Oz.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a cute little thing. I never as a kid ever noticed that. And watching it now, I was like, oh, that's cute. There's some other good ones. What, they got the 3D theater where they're, like, scooters there.
Boomerang fish.
Yeah. That might not be the best one, but it was all right.
Yeah, New
Zealand is throwing fish at the audience.
And then Fozzie in the cave with the bears.
Oh, that's
that one's
good.
Pretty, that one's pretty solid.
He's like, how did they do it? when they're, like, hibernating.
And, like, the one that cuddles up to him, he's all,
yeah, he's clearly like a scared virgin or something. Like,
this one isn't a postcard because she's still in Manhattan, but I think the stuff with Miss Piggy is hilarious. I mean, twofold. One is the fact that she's spying on Kermit and jealous of the fact that this girl is being, like, really nice to him.
Oh my god,
right.
That's one of the best gags in the movie.
It's hilarious, but then the other thing is when you see Miss Piggy at the perfume counter, and it's the Joan Rivers cameo.
Wow.
And
they just
that
lose
is
their
minds.
That is a really weird. That's a really weird scene to watch.
Yeah, they're just putting makeup all over each other.
Was just like George, she has like she must have had like an hour, and they just all right, bring her by. And what do you want to do? I don't know. She can just like draw on Miss Piggy's face with lipstick. Like, whatever Joan Rivers wants to do, if she's gonna be in our movie, she can just destroy a Miss Piggy. But it's great, like in the first gag you were talking about, how when Miss Piggy's like spying on Kermit, and what's the girl's name? Like the
I forget her name. Where she's like binoculars looking in on them.
Yeah, and the like the construction workers are catcalling.
Oh yeah, that is amazing. That is like, amazing. One by one, they all start joining. Yeah.
Hey,
Piggy, Piggy.
The best is the
Well, that's Kermit.
That's Kermit
right?
later.
That's Kermit later because Kermit.
The sounds of love.
Well, or maybe they.
I think they do it there too.
Really?
I think they do it there too.
It's just such a great setup.
Which is that's so funny because obviously Suey is fucking Deliverance. It's like a subtle reference to like a rape scene that's like made its way into a Muppet movie.
It is a real pig call though.
I know. Hey.
No, but John's right that from a pop culture standpoint, that's the first place anyone who's seen that movie goes
that's
to.
True. Yeah. I give them credit that they had to know that. And we're like, you know what? Whatever.
Yeah, you're right, Matthew. That is really, really, it's probably the funniest part of the movie. It's just like, because it, like you said, it's not just one guy, it's multiple construction workers. And then the best part is when she sees Kermit, like, get what, a kiss from the cheek or a hug from the girl, she gets so angry that she just like bends a pipe, which again, I know it's obviously not a real pipe, but it's pretty funny to watch a puppet bend something, even though that's probably just a foam pipe or whatever, but it's pretty cool to see that happen. And then the guy's just kind of like, okay, and like back away from her.
And then she beats the heck out of that barrel.
They always give her like really funny angry eyes too. Like, swap her eyes out with these like demented like
bug eyes.
I think they do that in Muppet Caper too, where she's like karate kicking people and stuff.
Well,
in the Muppet movie too.
That's the thing that you, I don't know. We were talking amongst the group about how she's not the only female Muppet, but she's the only real prominent one.
Yes.
Is that a good symbol as the only female character? Is she, because she always kind of comes across to some people as a little shrill, a little power hungry.
Yeah, Lee was saying she didn't think that was a very good feminist like.
Well,
model.
She I don't know if she was saying it wasn't, but she was kind of questioning it. Like, is this, it's interesting that the only female character is kind of a diva and all that. But then the thing I really noticed kind of reinforced throughout all of these movies is Miss Piggy doesn't take any crap from anyone.
Yeah.
And I mean, that goes like at the end of The Great Muppet Caper, for example, she like she saves the day. She flies that motorcycle through the window and kicks the crap out of everybody. Like, you don't mess with Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, they definitely do make light of I'm not saying all women are like this, but it's just sort of a tendency for some women to sort of emotionally be all over the Richter scale of like, you don't kind of know where they're at and they're very kind of flighty and jumping around. But I don't think it's a negative. I mean, I think it's really funny. She's just like passionate. She's very passionate for Kermit.
I think it's also tapping into, again, that the whole purpose of the Muppets is they're in show business. Mm-hmm. And they want to try and get into show business. And so the female character has to fight against all the other male characters who get the attention. So she's got to demand it. And I think there's something that's okay with that. I mean, it's a male-dominated world in many respects, but especially in Hollywood, you got to do all you can to get the attention you deserve.
Yeah, I'm fine with Miss Piggy. Yeah. I think she's a great role model.
And let's give some credit to Frank Oz for the work he does with her. Right? Yeah. Man, is that shit funny. Do we have anything else about Muppets Take Manhattan?
What is it? Manhattan Melodies? Is that the show that...
I believe so. Yeah.
We finally get to see it or version of it produced and basically what it looks like by the end, and it's pretty impressive, I think.
Well, they get married.
Muppet Fair.
Exactly.
That song, I'm an old softie, and every time they sing, somebody's getting married and they're getting ready to. Like, I loved it so much that when I actually got engaged myself, we posted that on Facebook.
Nice.
Because it was sweet. And I don't know, it always just brings a smile to my face. But we should talk about when Kermit gets amnesia and joins the Madison Avenue, like, Mad Men advertising firm.
Yeah, how amazing is that? That it literally looks like it could be a scene in Mad Men today, except with frogs.
And his pitch for Ocean Breeze soap, it gets you clean. And then the ad guy's like, just say what the product does. That's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. So I wish advertiser was like that, because it's and then there's like charts of like stocks going up like 5,000%. He's like super successful.
Even more than that, I just love like the new like character that like Kermit becomes, like this sort of smarmy, like big business. Like he becomes this like white collar, you know, like
boring.
Yeah, boring. But like he thinks he's really funny. Like he's super into himself. Like it's, I don't know, it's just a really like great like dynamic between like regular Kermit and how he becomes this asshole, basically.
And that gives us the other Suey or whatever. Because he meets Miss Piggy. And is like, all in love with the pigs. Like, just making
I guess we'll be bringing home the bacon.
Yeah. Which is really funny because Kermit is never that mean.
No, he never would be.
So to see him be like such a dick is really funny.
Well, that's, I don't know. Overall, I think that's, again, one of the reasons why this is, you know, perhaps the strongest movie to me, is it's really funny, but it also has a lot of depth to it. Because the other thing that you see at the beginning when they all break up and go their separate ways temporarily is, it all starts because Kermit gets really frustrated at some point because they're all looking to him as the leader, and he feels this pressure to deliver, to be successful for all of them. And he snaps and he immediately apologizes like a minute or two later, like, sorry, but the message is already sunk in. And that's why they're all like, yeah, we can't just be dependent on Kermit. You know, we put too much pressure on him. And I'm like, just such a mature message for a kid's movie.
Very much.
And then they all still come back together and are successful at the end. So it's a nice happy ending, but it's moments like that. You get to see Kermit kind of lose his cool for a minute. And at the end, you get that funny joke where he's got amnesia and all. It's nice to see them playing with the characters a little bit and giving them some depth, which, I mean, really, we're talking about, stop and think about it for just a second. We're talking about a kid's movie with puppets, and we're talking about depth of character.
90% of the time when we talk about a Muppet like Kermit or Miss Piggy, I'm not thinking of them as a puppet. I'm thinking like, that's Miss Piggy.
That's
like,
true.
She is a living, breathing entity to me, like at least comedy-wise. Like she's like this character. So I don't know. I think it's a lot to be said for the puppeteers and the voice actors. They just do really good work.
And a lot of it's, to me, is like the movements.
Yeah,
they don't just sit there and move their mouths. Like, you know, some of them have eyes that look around. You know, they move their arms. They think. They feel they stand awkwardly. They're so lifelike, even though their, you know, physical appearance doesn't really, you know, they look like they're made of felt. And I'm sure the Blu-rays of these movies, they probably even look more that way. But just their stance and their behavior makes them real.
I think the fact that they're so distinct is what also adds to it. Miss Piggy doesn't move like Kermit. Right. Kermit doesn't move like Fozzie. Like, they are these... Yeah, they're totally unique.
Yeah, they don't look like they're all cut from the same cloth. You know, they all come from a different... Sorry, that was not... I realized that's why saying that. That's kind of a point. One of the other things I think we forgot to mention, too, is it's the intro of Rizzo the Rat.
Yeah. That's true.
In the movies, and it's, I mean, also an amazing sequence is when he brings in his is it his family or his buddies?
Something.
Oh, all that stuff where they're cooking. I mean, oh, that's amazing. Like, there's an actual, like, he's on what a stick of butter moving around, and it's melting on the. On the skillet, on the griddle, and you're like, "What is going
They're
on?"
They're jumping all over the place.
It's amazing. It's real. To this, if I saw it today in a new movie, I'd be impressed. Let alone what was that? 20 years ago?
Maybe a little more. Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I love that.
Ratatouille's got nothing on that.
And you know, Stu, going back a little bit, what you were talking about earlier about it being sort of an emotional movie, I think it's almost kind of like a therapeutic movie, because it's a very fine line between the Muppets or the Misfits that are trying to put on a show. And if you kind of start to think about it, it's like, well, Jim Henson and the puppeteers, and like, how far is that analogy really from just being just them? Like, Jim Henson's very obviously Kermit the Frog, and to me, that's like Kermit getting frustrated and yelling at his crew and apologizing and then moving on and trying to do other things. Like, I know Henson loves the Muppets, but I know he also had ambitions to make, like, darker stuff. Like, he, you know, went on to do the Dark Crystal and the Labyrinth.
Dark Crystal's
amazing. Yeah. So I imagine it's almost therapy, like, work out a lot of your conflicts and just put it in the movie, because the Muppets are you and you are the Muppet. I think that's why they're so good, is it's they're really not that far off from just being the real people.
Right. Yeah, and again, that's a really good point, John, because I think that's what, like, for me, elevates this movie, is it's not that there's anything wrong with Muppet Caper or the original Muppet movie, but it goes just a little bit beyond, oh, hey, Muppets having fun and doing crazy things and being slapsticky, and it's still all those things, but then it has this extra element that's pumped into it, and it really pays off at the end. I mean, I love that ending with the wedding and everything. It really works. And I love the fact that she's tricking Kermit.
Yes.
That's
I thought Gonzo was going to play the minister.
It's like the most perfect laugh cue ever. She does it so convincingly. And of course, our Sesame Street cameo for this.
Yes.
Everybody essentially in the pews of the church.
That was so cool. Yeah. It's almost like they're trying to top the shot from the end of the Muppet movie. Because then they go to the church full of Muppets. And it's just like every Muppet you could ever think of is like present. That's a really good ending.
We had also realized watching it, some of us had made the comment, once they got to that sequence of Manhattan Melodies, they had closed the fourth wall off, so they were no longer basically on a stage performing for an audience. It seemed fully enclosed now, and it was just completely part of the sequence now, and it's as if the world had closed in, and it was just enclosed in the
church. Yeah, it's almost like the reality of the show they were putting on became like actual reality more so than just them putting on a show.
Yeah,
and they have to do that show every night.
Right.
Getting married 365 days a year. Let's move on to the next movie, which is The Muppet Christmas Carol.
It's in the singing of a street corner choir. It's going home and getting warm by the fire. It's true wherever you find love. It feels like Christmas. It feels like Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Right.
Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas time right now.
It feels like Christmas.
I think it really helped that it's kind of Christmas time when we watch this marathon, because while it might not necessarily be the best Muppet movie, it's a really good Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to watch.
It's the only one that I saw in theaters, and I really liked it when I was a kid, because I like the Christmas Carol story anyway, but then having Muppets and Michael Caine in it,
oh my god,
just
Michael
the best
Caine
thing I could ever have seen with the Christmas Carol or when I was a kid.
Yeah,
it's amazing even now.
I'm going on record live on the air right now, I'm calling it. Michael Caine is the best Ebenezer Scrooge that ever was or ever will be. I'm confident in that. I think he's amazing in the movie.
I would challenge you on that if it weren't for Bill Murray isn't actually technically Scrooge.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I would also challenge you to, have you seen some of the older versions?
I have. I've seen many a Christmas Carol. Michael Caine, I think, just like, dude, the misty-eyed, like, near crying. He's,
don't get me wrong, it's good. I'm not saying that. It's just like some of the older versions have some pretty classic performances.
Oh, I agree. I'm not dogging old Chris. It's sort of the same thing that, you know, Charles Grodin had going on, where it's sort of like he just gives it. It's like you wouldn't even think Michael Caine was in a Muppet movie. Like, he's literally given it 100% like, I am actually Ebenezer Scrooge in a real thing. He's like crying about his lost love.
No, it's great. Yeah.
And I don't know. There's, I mean, maybe I'm just biased because I love the Muppets in general and it puts me in a, like a really positive mood. But I just call him my number one Ebenezer.
I mean, you've seen like the Reginald Lowen or the Albert Finney.
Agree with me. Agree that I'm right. I'm right. He's the best. End of discussion. He's the best.
I think we can all agree that Muppet Christmas Carol has the best Ghost of Christmas Present.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing that comes close to that Ghost of Christmas Present.
That's my favorite sequence, really.
Yeah, he's amazing. Like,
it's my favorite musical number, too.
Whenever
it feels like Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like Christmas.
Such a great song. And it works great out of context on its own. It's a great Christmas song, and I've had the pleasure of actually singing that with friends and a Christmas caroling group out in the public on the streets.
Nice. Oh, that's cool.
It warmed my heart completely to sing it out loud with us. It's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you care to regale us with a ditty?
It's in the singing of the street corner choir. It's going home and getting warm by the fire.
We're all dancing.
It's true wherever you find love, it feels like Christmas.
Well done.
Nice.
No, Marley and Marley, though.
Yeah, that's fun, too. That'll be available on iTunes for 99 cents. And that's a great use of Statler and Waldorf splitting up the Jacob Marley character.
Oh, definitely.
It's great.
Yeah. Jacob and Robert Marley.
Yeah, that's sort of a fun game to play with the movie, because this is sort of the first – I mean, yeah, they're playing characters in Great Muppet Caper. This is the first time the Muppets in a movie are taking on a story that we know prior to them.
Exactly.
And it's sort of a fun game to be like, oh, who's going to play, you know, who? They make some like, okay decisions and some really good decisions about who's going to play what. And I agree that the Marley, Jacob and with Robert Marley, that's probably the best one, because it's such a – that's such a smart – to marry those guys with that.
I like that you get to see them as younger versions of themselves.
Oh, I know. The one and only that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're at Fozzie Wig's Christmas party.
Fozzie Wig. Genius.
It's so genius. And that's another clever way. Like, they're able to sort of work in them heckling Fozzie in a sort of a natural way. Like, I think that's the only drawback I can think of in the movie, is that it's not as Muppety as the rest. Like, you get Muppet stuff, but they sort of just try to put it in where they can, and it's not throughout.
We were talking during the marathon about how, like, Christmas Carol and Treasure Island are the two movies that are not Muppet-centric. All the other movies are about Muppets doing Muppet things, or at least playing characters as Muppet comedians. But this is like, we're following Michael Caine in Muppet Treasure Island. We're following the boy, and the Muppets are sort of like these, you know, extrapolated characters. And to me, Christmas Carol ends up working anyway. But Muppets are at their best when they're the focus. The movies they're at their best when they're the central theme. So I think it's just a testament to the Dickens story that it's so engaging, and that they really spent a lot of time figuring out, like you said, like which Muppet is going to play which character.
Yeah.
And it's a good formula, but it doesn't work for all of them.
I think I agree. It succeeds because the Muppets are fun and entertaining, and the strength of Dickens' story, I mean, it's been translated so many times in so many different ways, and there's just something about the structure of it that works so well. As long as the performances are good, you're going to be involved in that story.
Yeah.
I think you hit on something in it. This is when the Muppets start to feel a little more like a sideshow in a way, because, you know, as great as Michael Caine can be, it ends up being a Michael Caine movie, you know, and then the cast around him. And then it starts feeling like, oh, it's fun. You know, Kermit is Bob Cratchit and Statler and Waldorf are Marley, and all. It starts feeling like it almost feels like the Muppets are playing cameos instead of having stars come in to be cameos. And again, it works, and I enjoy this movie, but I think it's one of those things. And this is the first movie that is made after Jim Henson passed away. And
yeah, you have to imagine that has to have something to do with it.
I wonder if this story was important to his son who directed it, or if it just starts being – with him gone, the creativity is maybe a little lost, and it's easier to kind of take an existing story where you don't have to write it, you don't have to worry about where you're going to go with it plot-wise. You can just have some fun riffing on an existing story
that
with your characters. And it's good, and it works, but it's a little bit of a crutch, I think, for this movie. That is the second unintentional pun for me tonight. But I'll try and go for the trifecta before we're done.
Well, to me, honestly, when I look back at this movie, and I really do enjoy it, and don't get me wrong, I really do enjoy the fact that it's the Muppets playing these characters. I have to think from my childhood that the reason that this movie got made was because Mickey's Christmas Carol got made. It's like, let's take all these Disney animated characters and put them in the roles of these characters from A Christmas Carol. I mean, it's Mickey as Bob Cratchit and Uncle Scrooge as Ebenezer Scrooge. That's obvious. But then you have Jiminy Cricket playing the Ghost of Christmas Past, and you have like the giant from Mickey the Beanstalk, and you have
Goofy as Marley.
Yeah, Goofy as Marley. You've taken these characters and put them in a situation where they're not playing themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that the success of that just ABC special that Disney did, say, hey, we can do that. We can do that with the Muppets.
I think it's interesting too that after Jim Henson died, that's when the focus of the franchise really shifts to Gonzo.
Definitely.
Kermit sort of takes a back seat to Gonzo and Rizzo being like this sort of like comedy duo, like team, like leading the charge. And I mean, I like Gonzo, and as Richard said, it is his favorite, but I thought it was a sort of a strange choice that he became the face of the Muppets for a while.
Well, I think it's okay for this movie. Him as Charles Dickens, I actually think is really funny, and that's a good match. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, especially Muppet Treasure Island, Muppets from Space, it's like three Gonzos in a row. Like, yeah, that's a lot.
I feel like in a way it's almost unintentional, because if you were to look at Christmas Carol and cast it from scratch with Muppets, it's obvious that Kermit has to be Bob Cratchit.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start filling out all the roles, I'm sure you could have found one for Gonzo, but it just seems natural that he sticks out a little bit. And so it makes sense, like, okay, let's make him kind of a narrator to get you through the story. And I think in a way it's almost unintentional. I don't think they meant for Gonzo to suddenly become the front man, but this movie makes him the front man. It was really successful, and then all of a sudden it's the Gonzo show.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, I think there's no coincidence. Jim Henson dies, and he's your front man with Kermit. And while they have a serviceable, you know, replacement, he sounds like Kermit, it's all right. It kind of makes sense to me, like, well, okay, Kermit's not exactly what he used to be, so let's not draw too much attention to it. We'll sort of move the focus.
Mm-hmm.
And that might even be just self-conscious on their part, like, oh, shit, we don't have Jim Henson, like, and just sort of taking the pressure off themselves.
And weren't you saying, Stu, that that's also part of the reason why from here on out we sort of lose Ralph for a while?
John was actually
saying. Oh, is that you, John?
Oh, while we were watching the marathon?
You were saying that Ralph was really close to Jim Henson.
Jim Henson, like something personal was like with Ralph, and that's why.
Well, in the same way I mentioned he was sort of the first Muppet, I know Jim Henson voiced Kermit and voiced Ralph. And obviously Kermit, you know, there's no getting rid of Kermit, so you got to work with that. But Ralph, while we love him, isn't necessarily the front man, so he can maybe in the same way they sort of take the focus off of Kermit and switch it to Gonzo, I'm sure they took Ralph and sort of started using him less and less because maybe they felt it was like disrespectful or something. I don't know.
Well, for this movie anyway, I mean, it's situational to me, like, because, you know, you don't see Fozzie in this movie except for in that one scene. Mm-hmm. Because it's the situation of his character. He's only in that one scene, and Rolf is in that scene with them. He's playing the part of the band with Electric Mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only time you see him, because of his situation of being a part of that scene. It wouldn't make sense for him to be in the movie later.
And that's why I was saying earlier that this movie starts to feel like there's no. It used to be the Muppets with Hollywood cameos, and this movie feels like a different story with Muppet cameos.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, that's the Rolf thing is probably the thing that disappoints me the most over this last run. He is part of that core group. When you sit down and if you were to just ask anyone who is even remotely familiar with the Muppets to name five Muppets, you're going to come up with Kermit and Fozzie and Miss Piggy and Gonzo and, you know, Ralph, Animal. Those are the ones who start coming up.
Muppet Babies.
I mean, he's an important part in it. I guess it's disappointing to me because you don't. Though Kermit might get scaled back or some of the others might, you know, be a little more hit and miss, he seems to literally disappear. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because of the reason that you mentioned, John, that it was just something that he was so close to Jim Henson that they felt it was disrespectful or not. But it's disappointing because he is one of my favorite parts and he doesn't really have a presence in the later movies.
Well, do we have anything about Muppet Christmas Carol before we move on?
First time you ever see a Muppet using puppets.
Right. There's like a crowd shot where, yeah, there's a Muppet doing, I can't remember if he's doing like Punch and Judy show.
Yeah,
or
it is.
Yeah.
One of those.
Yeah, and it's, I remember, Josh, you were like, my mind is blown! Because it was like a Muppet with puppets.
All right, that is going to do it for part one of the Muppet Cinemarathon. Tune in a week or so when we post part two up. To tide you over until then, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we posted a video of the bet between Matthew and myself that we called the Tuco Cemetery Challenge. And if you'd like to check that out, you can find it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cinemarathon. There's also a link on our Twitter account, which is Cinemarathon P-O-D, that's Cinemarathon Pod. As well, we posted it on our website, which is cinemarathonpodcast.com. So three ways to view it. I'm sure you can find one of them. And if you have any questions or comments, or if you'd like to suggest future marathons, you can email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. So happy holidays, and we'll see you next time.